Well, Veronica Ferry, welcome to Power and Witness podcast. And I'm meeting with you at the Canadian Martyr Shrine up in Midland, Canada. You're making a five-day retreat. But I wanted to ask you just about Madonna House. And the big question, what is it? Well, first, let me ask you, why are we up here? Why aren't we in Auriesville, New York? I heard those martyrs are braver and bolder and things.
Definitely. They're definitely braver and bolder. Well,
just kidding.
You can delete all this part out, can't you?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
We got the real martyrs up here.
But tell me about Madonna House. What is it?
Well, a common question we run into is Madonna House, what is it? And actually, when I became an applicant, you're given this brown folder that Catherine herself put together. And there's a file in there called Madonna House, what is it? And I was so excited. Finally, all my questions will be answered. It's in writing. And I opened it up and I found Catherine saying, you know, Madonna House is a wounded heart. Madonna House is a cup of tea. Madonna House is an open door. And I thought, well, that leaves me wondering, what is it? And I found after 15 years of being in the apostolate that that's gone a little deeper to say, okay, well, Madonna House is a group of people who've taken promises, poverty, chastity, and obedience. We live together simply. We live a Nazareth life. We do simple work. We do laundry and the things you do at home. We do cooking. And, you know, you've got men and women living together, taking vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. That's unusual, but somehow it works. But at the essence of it, I think, you know, when guests come to us and they're received into our community, what they find is an open door, a wounded heart. And what does that mean? I don't know. You've come up there, Father. You've been in our community.
Yeah, about two years ago.
Did you ever experience? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? What an open door might look like for you?
Yeah, definitely. I sang the praises of it. You all have many visitors. I was there September, early October, and I don't know how many visitors, but they're like 20 or 30 or something.
Oh, at yeah. Least. We have a turnover of you know, 20 or 30 people through at a time.
Yeah.
They can stay for a week, they can stay for a month, or even up to a year. And what happens when they come, what they experience is, okay, this is not a retreat. This is a time to welcome. Here's a broom. You're right into the work of things, but you're also experiencing liturgy. You're having meals with people who care about what you're saying, who are listening to you, are attentive to you, and just welcome you as you are. And I think some people just haven't experienced that before. And for Catherine, that's the power of the gospel, is just being present to people. And she called it the chit-chat apostolate. And I think that's so, we probably all know people who have that charism of the chit-chat apostolate. You sit down and you're just sharing about that person's life, but there's something else communicated, which is welcome. You're allowed to be here. You're loved. You're wanted. Mm-hmm. You're part of something.
Yeah, I definitely experienced that. Mm-hmm. And you, I think you pointed it out too. It's called Madonna House. There's a real presence of Our Lady. There's a presence of hospitality, but also I think people come and experience like a healing and growth. And yeah, people pay attention to you. There's no TVs going. You're at picnic tables, six at a table in the dining hall. And like you're talking.
Yeah, over the oatmeal.
Over the oatmeal, you're talking. And people listen and tell you a story, you tell them a story, and you all don't ask a lot of questions either. You don't pry.
That's right. And that's really a conscious decision because, you know, at first when people come, you know, it's unusual. Well, why don't they want to know, what do I do? You know, how do I explain myself? And we really try not to ask you what you do. We try to just receive you as you are. Yeah. So to say, you're a doctor. Oh, great. You know, no, it's just to say, a safe question to ask is, how did you hear about Madonna House? And that you can get to know a person and know nothing about them because it's something about just receiving them as they are. And if they want to share something, that's great.
Yeah.
But they don't have to impress. There's no impressions to be made.
Yeah. And I was there just over a month, and I had a powerful experience, I felt, with the members, the staff, they call them, and the other visitors. You know, you work with them. I wasn't doing a lot of work, but you know, you do clean up after kitchen or
you did some work.
Yeah,
I saw
wood chopping or something.
You were on the wood pile.
But yeah, you have a great fellowship with the other visitors too. And I was with the priest, and we had some priest nights of pizza and stuff, and that was good. Father Jill, I remember, talked a lot with him. Father Kiernan. But yeah, definitely a nurturing Madonna presence there. And I my impression too, that Catherine Doherty started Friendship House, wanted them to make vows, and they weren't interested in that. So she very much wanted to build a community. I feel like a community that other people could come plug into and experience it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Friendship House years, as that community started to grow, there was an interest in doing something of vows. But at that point, Catherine and Eddie got married. So there was a lot of instability in that community. There hadn't been anything set in stone, and there was some confusion. So when she came to Madonna House, I like to say, oh, our community was founded on a nervous breakdown. Because really, she came up to Canada. She had a cousin who had a cottage up here. And she and Eddie came up here really to have a break, because there was so much turmoil within the Friendship House community about where are we going with this. And Catherine didn't expect to found a community in Canada. Originally, we were, you know, Friendship House Canada, but what it became was something separate, completely identified differently than Friendship House. But that came out through Our Lady. Madonna House is like, okay, that you took this wounded person who has given so much, has poured her life out for the poor, was rejected in a deep sense through Friendship House in some way, some personal rejections there. She came up here on a nervous breakdown. And then finally, she could open the door and say welcome to the next person and start nursing. She had nursing experience, and she was a midwife. So she started serving the community around her. Well, eventually, people came up. Oh, the Baroness is here. They had heard her talk on lectures before. We want to see her. Mm-hmm. And so the community started building around her personality in a way.
And the area now, I guess it's like a vacation area, but...
Yeah.
Back then, to me, it was like rural Appalachia, right? It was very poor.
It was very poor. Yeah. Now it's, yeah, prime cottage. Everyone wants to move from Toronto to there, but it's still a pretty lonely place, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what drew you to join the community?
Oh, good question. You know...
Like, what brought you here?
Yeah, that's... Well, Jesus. Christ himself. But I had always... had on my heart, oh, maybe I'd be a nun or a sister. I had this deep desire for that. Lots of off-beaten tracks, but I eventually, when I came to Madonna House, it was just to have a break. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to come join these people. First of all, Madonna House, what is it? We're back to that question. I don't get you. What is this? What do you do, right? Yeah. So I get to Madonna House, and you speak of healing. That's really what I experienced at Madonna House. Not that I could point a finger and say, ah, I was healed from A, B, C. It was, ah, I feel I belong into something, something bigger than me, where Christ is the center and I'm loved here. So at first it was, oh, I'll stay because I'm receiving, right? And it's like a greenhouse. I was just like this little plant that was finally being stabilized in good soil. And eventually I'll go out of the greenhouse and do something. Very common. This is the guest experience. You come in, you grow, you go home, and you are a mature plant, you know. But eventually there's something in me turned. It did not take long. It was within a few months. It was like Our Lady, I think, reaching into my heart and just saying, here, you know. And my first thought was, no, not here. It's not legit. You know, I want the habit. I want something legit. Well, I asked the Director General of Women, I said to her, well, what's the difference between you and a nun? I really want it. Like, I'd studied canon law. I was in St. Paul's University for canon law. I thought, I want a canonical answer here. I want something legit. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, poverty, chastity, and obedience forever. What's the difference to God? And I thought, well, that's unfair. Don't bring God into this, you know. From his perspective, how can I give everything? And suddenly it like melted away. I said, okay, I won't have the habit maybe, but what does God see? And that just allowed me to be okay to say, okay, let me look at this closely. Mm-hmm. But as far as staying goes, it's a mystery to me a little bit. People have asked me all these years, oh, you have so many talents and you've done all these things and you have this education, and it looks like at Madonna House you just throw that all away. And I cannot tell you how happy I am to throw it all away and serve this greater thing, which is, yeah, you see guests coming. It's like a hospital. It's like a field hospital. People are lonely. They've never experienced family. They've never experienced community. They come in and there's something in me that really wants to give, you know, and that's the response in me is yeah, Christ is there. Yeah. And I don't know how to explain it more than that.
Yeah. In Cumbermere, the Madonna House at Cumbermere is the biggest house, right? And so the other, like, you're at a house in Toronto now.
That's right. Yeah, I'm Toronto.
So you don't house people. People can't come and stay. And that's the case, right, with most of the houses?
That's right, yeah. There's only a few houses people could stay in.
So the idea, like, Toronto would be you would draw alongside the poor, befriend the marginalized in some way.
Well, so we have field, what you're talking about is called field houses. So we have a few field houses in Canada, some in the States. We have one in Belgium, one in England. And the bishop invites us, a bishop who knows us says, yes, I want Madonna House in my diocese. He's usually familiar with our mandate from Catherine, you know, which is, again, you know, be little, be hidden, be poor, be a light. It's very broad. So you come in and then the bishop is the one who says, okay, for my diocese, I'd like you to start a soup kitchen, or I'd like you to be a prayer listening house for the government. Welcome to Washington, you know. So it's, each house has its own little mandate. And right now we're working on our mandate with the bishop. We're revisiting that. But in Toronto, gosh, I walk around and I say, Lord, what am I doing here? You know, but it's, again, it's that I go back to the wounded heart that Catherine's talking about. Well, what does that mean? What she means is, you know, if your heart is wounded, if you've suffered, which we all have, everybody can do this. Your heart has a wound in it. And if it's open, there's a door. You can identify with other people who are wounded and you can start to receive people as they are. How are you? Say, smile at a person. And if you do that with Christ, you can reach them. And so I don't know what I'm doing in Toronto. I have eaten a lot of meals with people. I've opened the door to a lot of people. We've talked in parishes or, you know, been around, but it's, people love it. They come to us and they say, there's something different here. Yeah. I feel at home here. Families come, poor people, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like somebody might stop by for a tea or something.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. We have lots of that. Lots of visiting. People are lonely. That's the big thing.
And the DC house is, they're like right on the hill, right?
Capitol Hill. They're just around the corner. Yeah.
And their mandate would be?
Well, pustinya is this word that Catherine, it's a Russian word, which means desert. Catherine started this pustinya. You can actually find her book. Pustinya is a classic, really spiritual classic. But what does it mean to go into the desert and pray and be alone with Christ? So their house is a prayer listening house founded on this going into the desert, taking 24 hours a week or whatever or more to be alone and pray and fast. So there's a more monastic almost feeling to that house. There's a lot of political figures who come through that house, people who have varying degrees of politics coming through, and they'll come for an epiphany party and they're all sitting around like two different sides. And it's a way people can receive an epiphany gift from the kings, like be very childlike and receive something simple. And you've got you know, one party here and one party there, and they're not talking politics. They're talking about Christ and mm-hmm. how healing that is in a place that's so divided.
Yeah.
That's unusual.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
You're part of that healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about Catherine Doherty herself. Because she did bring the idea from Russian spirituality, right? The Pustinia was something.
Yeah. Well, so Catherine being Catherine, she's such a big person, such a epic life. But when she was a little girl and she was in Russia, and she remembers old Russia. She remembers the Russia that remembered God. And
she died in 1983 or 4?
1985.
Five, okay.
Yeah, so she, you know, she's she was able to kind of bring that into her spirituality, not because she was so conscious, but because it's just in the Russian people. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in her, it just naturally came out. Okay, of course the answer is what she remembers the old Pustinics doing in Russia, which is pray and fast, or the word Eurodivoy. That's a word meaning fool. So she's written a book about being a holy fool. Stronic pilgrim, you know. And these concepts, they might be really strange for the West, but for her, it's just like breathing, you know. So mm-hmm. it just bringing it into our community has embellished it and fulfilled it, made it fuller, I would say. A lot of guests who come can experience Pustinia. They can go to a little cabin in the woods, bring a, you know, some water and a loaf of bread, and you have your Bible, and we say, here you are, and you mm-hmm. stay here, you stay overnight. Here's how you start a wood stove. Good luck, you know? But they experience some, if they're ready to go there, if they want to be there, it can be a really profound experience, yeah. You know?
And you're faithful to it, right? When you're up in mm-hmm. Cumbermere, you would... Mm-hmm. What was your, how do you think it blessed you?
Pustinia is like, when I go to Pustinia, I find everything in me settles down and I finally have, you know, it's a place of peace and quiet, but within my heart too, it opens it up to be able to say, okay, here I am, Lord. I'm totally yours right now. So I can listen, I can be quiet, and it restores me to go back mm-hmm. into the hub, which is kind of busy. It's kind of relentless. Mm-hmm. We have a schedule. If you come, don't just to say, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to be, it's a full life. There's liturgy, there's meals, but you're not alone a lot. So carrying Pustinia in your heart, you know, it's a practice to go to the cabin and you may not always have that, but it's like an exercise. It starts to open you, to soften you, to be in touch with that quiet within mm-hmm. you, you know, which you may not even know is there till you go.
Yeah.
And gosh, it can be a struggle to be there. Gosh, it can be, you know, if you're there and suddenly all the stuff you put on hold for the week that you decided to ignore is, well, guess what? For the first 5 hours of your Pustinia, that's all you're thinking about. I should have read that email. I shouldn't have said that thing. I really need to go to confession. That person never should have said that to me. All the battle.
Yeah.
And then the quiet. And okay, Lord, I trust you. I need you. I pray for this person, you know, back at it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we should say maybe some of the busyness up at Cumbermere, there's like a few hundred acres at least y'all own.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of timber. You make maple, you harvest maple syrup. You have chickens and cows, dairy. You have plant corn or, mm-hmm. or potatoes
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you have apple picking.
Well, it's extensive. Yeah.
Yeah,
beekeeping.
Yeah. Beekeeping.
Yeah. The dairy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it, in some sense, that's just necessary to support a community that lives by begging as well. You know, we live by begging, we live by providence. We don't sell products to support a community. So we have, when we have a dairy, well, that's our yogurt, that's our cheese, that's our staples, that's our milk. And when we have maple syrup, well, that's our sugar source. You know, that's what we bake with. That's, it's a treat for us too. That's nice to have. But a lot of that is just, well, that's what it takes, you know, to live out in that area.
Yeah.
And when people are come into that, well, what a blessing that is to be able to work with your hands.
Yeah.
and do something normal.
Yeah.
Human.
Yeah.
Take care of bees. You get a chance to do that.
I remember when I was there, Jeremiah, one of the members, would that beat up kind of pickup truck.
Yeah.
They'd fill it up with wood because you have all these boilers. You heat everything, and you even cook on a wood stove. So he'd load up the visitor, the guest, and they would go out and chop wood, load up this thing. I mean, like, they'd come back all sweaty, dirty,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah.
You know, but it was great, especially, like, I think the guys to get out and do something. And,
yes. Men love to work together.
Yeah.
It's a way to be together, too.
Yeah.
They don't have to say much. Some of them do say much, actually. But after 3 hours on the wood pile, you run out of things to say, you know? It's just, here, guys being guys, and there's such a good camaraderie that the men can have at the dormitory. They live in dormitories together, right? So the men live in one dorm and the women in another. So these men, you know, they meet each other for maybe a few weeks, but what a great experience they have together, like you were saying.
Yeah. In fact, I remember a group of some of the staff guys, I think, went on a canoe trip. And, you know, it fascinated me because I had a high school friend that went up to the Boundary Waters in Canada from Alabama with an adult friend of his. And he talked about, yeah, you can drink the water out of the lake.
Well, I don't know if I'd do that, but don't do that. If you come, don't do that.
Well, anyway, it just always kind of captured me. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so these guys had gone out and they have to portage the canoe. They packed in all their food. They were gone.
Wow.
And it seemed like it just rained the whole time when they were gone. But, you know, it seemed like
an exciting. Who was that?
Oh, it was the big canoe guy and the big lumber guy. Who runs?
Darren and Alec, maybe.
It was a shorter guy that always had, was Father in charge. Louis. Well, he's in charge of the canoes and stuff, or at least he introduced me.
Oh, David Williams.
Maybe that was
it. Yeah, maybe him.
Yeah. They even packed brownies. I remember they had like a...
good like, for them. You know, it's good survival skills.
Yeah,
I like it already.
Good energy source, yeah. But yeah, you are on this beautiful dammed river, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have canoeing.
Oh, it's gorgeous, yeah. You know, getting out into nature is in itself a gift. Having that river, we have this... Honestly, it's the best view on the river, the Madawaska coming out in front of our house.
Yeah.
God knew what he was doing.
And then you go to that overlook. I don't know which direction you're looking, but the overlook you hike.
Ascension Rock.
Yeah, Ascension Rock. And then...
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, that was like
it's
right
stunning.
Over.
It's stunning. Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. You don't get that in Toronto. I kind of missed that. Hence the retreat at the shrine, folks. Yeah.
The other fascinating thing to me, too, was your clothing outreach. Because Catherine went there roughly in the 50s? Or?
Mm-hmm. 1947 was 47. Madonna House. Yeah.
So, but anyway, y'all have this long history of, and I'm talking like a lot of clothes.
Yes.
Like boxes of.
Yes.
And one of you all told me that it was just like people from Toronto knew about Madonna House and would have their people up there on vacation when they give clothes, but it just seemed like such an unusual thing to have in a rural area.
Yes, and that did develop over some time.
It
wasn't immediately all clothing, but I think initially her sense was, well, the local people need some source of something, you know, cheaper, or so how do we get to share the concept of even people giving their old clothes away? It was kind of new for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But now you have a place to bring them and people who are organizing it. So suddenly there's things. Catherine would think about things like this. Let's just start a shop and see what happens. And in cottage country where we are now, well, people are closing up their cottage. They'll bring stuff to us.
Oh,
we can
right.
donate it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's been a source, but
And she herself spent a lot of time sorting. I was just reading that. Desert to mountain.
So we do have a gift shop, which is not for our own means, but it goes to the poor and the missions. But Catherine, so she had this vision of, you know, how to restore everything to Christ. So you take grandma's old jewelry, it looks not so great, but then you start sorting it, you clean it, you fix it, and now it's out on sale and it's going to get some money for India or whatever. But Catherine would spend hours personally doing that sorting tiny little things. These things go left, these things go right, could be buttons, could be shoes. And for her, she loved that. She loved doing hands-on work, just ordinary work to restore something that would have been trashed maybe
right.
into something beautiful and giving back to the world, to the people, you know. That was, for her, it meant a lot, restoring all things to Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we should say, I mean, she's a spiritual writer. She's written a lot of things and powerful speaker. And she would tour around America, right? And gives talks. What about some things of her spirituality that resonated with you, that really spoke with you?
Yeah, she wrote a lot about doubts, loneliness, and rejection. You know, she wrote extensive staff letters and her diaries and things. And I've delved into some of this, and you can find things on her publication, you know, website that you may not find in her diaries, etc. I hope one day it's available. But her keen sense of what people carry for loneliness and how she really identified that with Christ, like, if I'm lonely, that means Christ is lonely in me and I can reach a lonely person. What a concept. I this is not science. You know, this is not neuroscience. This is just saying, well, if you're suffering, Christ is suffering.
Right.
It's such a simple spirituality.
I never thought of that.
And now you have something to give out of your nothingness.
Yeah.
Because she would come into the dining room and she would look around and she would feel, you know, she went through terrible, you know, depressions and loneliness and anxiety because she'd been through so many wars and served in such desperate places.
And had many family members killed by the
communists. Many family members killed. She had so many reasons to be totally having a nervous breakdown, you know, and she would too. But that didn't stop her from saying, okay, she'd come into the dining room, she'd look around and say, you know, I'm feeling really lonely right now. I'm going to, that guest looks very lonely. I'm going to go ask them how their day was.
Mm-hmm.
Out of your nothingness to give. And and that's where Christ works, to walk in and say, I've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No, Christ is going to do the work.
Yeah.
Just take the step.
Didn't she have something beautiful about going, you can go into another person's heart with Christ or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. Part of our mandate, actually, we have this word, go without fears into the depths of men's hearts.
Okay.
And that sounds, well, woozy, like, what's this, you know, like, okay, I get it. No, what she meant by that was, you meet someone new, there's a barrier there, there's a fear. Well, just reach out and touch them somehow, say hi. Mm. That can be so as simple as that, you know. Go without fears into the depths of the men's hearts. I shall be with you, says Christ. So you go to find Christ within them already. So it's Christ meeting Christ.
Yeah.
It's not as scary as it seems.
Right.
When we all do that, you know, if someone's got their phone in front of their, which we don't have have phones at Madonna House out and about. You can use your internet, you know, on your day off on Thursday. And on Sunday, it's pretty limited. So you don't have a phone in front of your face, but you walk around and people do. And what a fearful thing to be like, hey, how's your day going? You know, no one does that. Go without fears into the depths of men's hearts. Hi.
Yeah.
That's scary enough.
Yeah.
Good enough, Lord.
You all give the priest a lot of leeway. There's a little.
It's true. They get away with some more.
But, well, I remember some of the staff members telling me, you need to put your
phone
away.
Shut your phone up, Father.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah. And that is good. It's amazing. It helps us just to pay attention to one another. And we're so distracted, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I read her book on the priesthood years ago. I mean, like, probably 15, 20 years ago. And because I had a friend of mine who was, he read some of her Pristina stuff and he was really taken by it. So I'd hear the name and somehow I came across the book. And that book, it wasn't like this big fancy theology of the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
It was very simple about the role of the priest. You know, she talked about preaching. She talked about bringing the presence of Christ to others and loving your flock, so to speak. And, but I thought it was the most powerful book because she you could just read in every line how she loved the priesthood.
She loved them.
Yeah.
She loved them. Really... And she reminded them who they were. That's the other thing, you know, because the priests, how many priests came and said, no, you don't understand. I'm sinful. Mm-hmm. And there was a priest who showed up years ago, and this is way ancient history, who was drunk. And she just served him, got him, you know, into his room. There you go, Father. And she asked for his blessing. And he said, if you knew who I was and what I did, you would not be asking for my blessing. And she said, your blessing, please, Father. And the next morning they had a good chat, you know, and it saved his vocation, because she said, of course you're sinful. Of course you're a man. You are a man. Yeah. And how much are we seeing this in the church today? Yes, you're a man. But Christ lives in you, and you are a priest forever. And she just drew that out. She had a gift of drawing that out in them, like saying, and so that in a way that it helped them say, oh, it's not about me. And their ego can take a back seat and they can relax and say, oh, it's really, I do my best, but I'm not supposed to be on this pedestal. I'm not supposed to be this person that people want me to be, holy, like blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to do what Christ asked me to do today. And he's the priest. He can take care of it. He's the priest in me. She was so strong in that. I've talked to countless priests, and one of them was my spiritual director, Father Pat McNulty, was on his way out of the priesthood when he met Catherine. Last chance. That's what he said. Last chance, Lord. And he went up to see this crazy baroness he'd heard about, and she just got him right away, hooked him right away, you know? She saw him.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah, it's really beautiful. She loved priests.
Do you have a favorite book of hers that you...
Good question. I think Boga Roditsia on Our Lady, or Molchani on Silence. I want to talk a little bit about Molchani. It's a strange book to read. I mean, if you do read it, there's a lot of poetry in it, and she takes all these side paths, but something about finding that still point, being on the sands of this lake and climbing a stairway up to the last stairway to heaven, you know, this kind of, it's a mystical kind of book, actually. It's a little out there, but in some ways it's just, you get a sense of the stillness within her. And I want that. I want that somehow. I don't know what it is. I hope one day to find out. Maybe my 5-day retreat will finally tell me where the stillness is. Molchani is a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
And do you have a favorite experience or story from Madonna House, or maybe it was from a visitor or some encounter that...
Oh, man, we have so many to draw on. What to say? You mean with the guests or...
Guests or even amongst the staff.
You know... I'm just trying to think of how I was received. Recently, we just lost one of our members, Mary Davis. She just turned 90 years old, and then she died of cancer. And she had been working in the gardens for, I think it was something like 50 years. And when I showed up, Mary Davis was still working in the orchards in her 70s, carrying the ladder, climbing into the van. She insisted that I sit in the seat and she sits on the floor because there wasn't enough seats in her truck to drive around. And something about Mary Davis, I think this real person who just didn't, she didn't talk like spiritual, she wasn't talking a spiritual talk, she was just doing her thing, you know, checking, we do these rounds, I did endless rounds, you know, checking the apples with Mary and taking the worms out of the trees and wrapping up the fake apples to decoy the bugs and in the rain and in the sun and her carrying these big burlap bags. It's just, to me, that's just, when she died and I was near her bedside before she died, and she said to me, Veronica, I said, yes, I'm here, Mary. What do you need? You know, I'm thinking maybe she's going to feed the birds. Okay. She wants me to feed the birds. This is one of her last concerns. It's just like that woman who just finishes, everything needs to be in order. She's putting all her house in order before she goes to God. And then she went peacefully.
Yeah.
But such concern for the earth, for her, for people. Yeah.
I saw her doing that. Y'all have, I don't know if you call them blue jays, but they're like these yeah. huge blue
big, birds. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big blue jays.
They
yeah.
are blue jays?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The bullies of the bird feeder. Yeah.
That she would feed them and they'd come.
Oh, yeah. You know, she was just like, I don't know. People found shelter under Mary. And what is it about it? You can't point to anything. This yeah. poor woman, really, who just did little things with great love.
Yeah.
Great love and fidelity over and over.
She had beautiful big blue eyes. Mm-hmm. Look at you. Mm-hmm. I took a picture of her. Look at that look.
Oh, do you? I want to see it.
Yeah, I'll pull that up.
I miss her. But she's, yeah, there's a something about these people, you know. I look at our elders and I see that. They're so precious to us.
I saw that old picture of her when she was like a teenager. I think she swam across the lake.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. She's very athletic. And
yeah, she just looked fearless. I mean, it looked like, yeah, I was probably like the
I think she was fearless. You know, she'd say, oh, yeah, I went on a camel across the Sinai Desert when I was assigned to Israel, our house in Israel. And doesn't bat an eye, you know. But at the same time, it's just as important as her, you know, making the bread for the liturgy that she'd make for the Eastern liturgy. She'd make the bread for that. All those things are it's just what Mary does. Go across the Sinai Desert, make some bread, feed the birds. It's all the same.
Yeah. Well, Veronica, our half hour is up.
Oh, too bad.
Thank you so much.
It's been enjoyable. Yeah. Nice chatting with you. Mm-hmm.